Chris, pro sandwich artist, amateur spokesperson. Rolling!
New Subway delivery. Order only on the Subway app and get special deals. Like $0 delivery fee.
Chris, are you ordering on the Subway app right now?
Maybe?
Ooh, could I get in on that? Eat fresh, refresh. From the top, please. Freshly prepared for your order. Limited time at participating shops. Terms, taxes, and other fees still apply. Cut!
Hour number two of our radio program. Away we go, and we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home in a simple way to get it, well, Rocky Cam, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. On a football Friday, Jersey Jerry going to join us from Barstool Sports at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific for a little NFL picks. But first up, we got some audio. We got some information. We got to talk about it. We combine all those things together, and we get a news brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Connor, I tried not to eat during the show. I don't know if it's obvious to you, but it's obvious to me. I'm having trouble speaking during this segment. My mouth is watering. My mouth is on fire because they usually bring pizza into the office on Friday. And they have this spicy pepperoni slice. And I walked into the office today and I go, I'm not really in the mood for pizza. But then I was sitting here and I got hungry. It's a minute after seven. I got a smell of the pizza. So I devoured a Sicilian Detroit style pepperoni slice during the break. And now I'm like playing hurt here. I'm struggling to talk. My mouth's on fire.
There's never a correct answer because you could either not eat and be starving all show, or you can try to squeeze it in, but you only get 5 minutes to try to eat whatever it is you're trying to eat, and then you got to deal with it maybe being spicy, maybe it's grease, you get a little acid indigestion. There's never a right answer
upset
to it.
Upset stomach, diarrhea. What is that, like a little Pepto-Bismol commercial? But I try not to eat during the show because then my mouth is just watering, and I feel like it's tough to really talk, which it's not good for a talk show host if you're struggling to talk. And that's why I either try to eat after the show or at least like an hour in advance before the show. So I think I'll be okay. You know, I'm like Justin Herbert last night. Have a little injury. Even though I don't go get the win, I'll go deliver a nice pass on fourth and long, then set up a touchdown, cover the spread for the folks that were on the Chargers last night, and everyone will be happy with me.
Sometimes you just got to play through pain.
Yeah, I'm playing hurt right now. Or playing fat right now, as some people would say. Let's go to Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs Chargers last night. Mahomes and company, they come back from down 10 twice to get the victory. Last night's win, according to the Chiefs signal caller, was a collective effort.
Pretty much the first half, we were trying to protect, get the ball out fast and do stuff like that. I just thought in the second half, we trusted in our O-line. We gave them a few chips, a few receivers hitting tight ends, kind of doing stuff to help them out. I thought they did a great job of giving me that time, enough time to make those throws. But that's a great defense, and I thought we battled and found a way to get the win. Justin Watson came in when McColl was a little banged up, and he got McColl's route, and he won against a Pro Bowl, All-Pro corner. And so for guys like that to make their imprint on the game, that'll help us out as we get into these tough games like this, that we can get touchdowns and stuff like that from everybody.
The two biggest sequences of this game was the pick six, when it looked like the Chargers were about to go back up by seven for 99 yards. And then right after throwing the pick six, you say, okay, pick six is bad. You're down by seven. You're on the road after being up by 10 twice. You got to go matriculate the ball down the field and go get a touchdown. You go three and out. That was Justin Herbert and the Chargers. So that is a big team effort win by Kansas City. And Kansas City's showing you this year, and I even heard Mahomes say it the last two games, we don't care how we win. We don't care if it's pretty. We don't care if it's sloppy. We don't care if it's ugly. Just as long as they're winning. And through the first 2 weeks, game number one, very pretty victory. Game number two, looked ugly for a little bit, and the Chiefs still found a way to remind everyone, yeah, we're still that good. Yeah, we're not out until you put the nail in our coffin. You think just because we lose Tyreek Hill, we're going to take a step back? No. We'll start the year off 2-0, and everyone once again got to see that in an isolated window on a Thursday night game last night in the NFL. Last week, Mahomes was awesome. He's awesome like every week. That's what the guy does. He had 5 passing touchdowns and PFF, Pro Football Focus, which I like some of their numbers, but I don't live and die with their numbers. I say this about all analytics and anytime when it comes to numbers. Use the information. Use the analytics. But then you also have to use your brain, your eyes, and your gut. And how they were just so harsh in their rating of Patrick Mahomes last week made absolutely zero sense. And the guy threw 5 passing touchdowns and just annihilated and obliterated the Arizona Cardinals. Now, Mahomes maybe should have had a few interceptions last night. The Asante Samuel one that was overturned, that one I didn't get. And then he also dropped one. You know, things just happened throughout that game. Patrick Mahomes jokes that his near pick last night will lead to a lower Pro Football Focus grade.
The corner who had been playing, just kind of getting out of there the whole time, he dropped down to play cover two, and so it got me. I mean, I don't throw it just straight to guys most times, and so, but got lucky enough that it bounced around, hit the ground, and I was able to get another chance at it. I'm sure PFF will have me a low grade for that, but I'll keep it rolling.
I love that line, Connor, because how many times the athletes, when there's things being said about them or there's ratings that don't make sense, they go, oh, yeah, I didn't hear that. I don't pay attention to that negative energy. There's Patrick Mahomes, one of the best quarterbacks in football, top 3 quarterback in football, saying, yeah, I threw 5 touchdown passes last week, and shame on you, PFF. I'm not going to say it in a mean way, an arrogant way, but I'll just take a little extra dig at you. Yeah, I'm sure my Pro Football Focus grade will go down a bit.
Yeah, athletes always like to pretend like they never hear any of the outside noise, and I don't read the papers, I don't watch TV ever, I don't ever listen to sports radio. The reality is they might not be locked into all that stuff, but they hear what people are saying about them. They know what goes on. They're on Twitter. They see some of the stuff. They get notifications. And I like when an athlete actually acknowledges, like you said, that they saw the criticism and they understand what it is.
Now, I understand not listening all the time. And when I was earlier in my career, I would say, oh, I hate the radio host that goes, I never listen. I don't know what's going on in the station. Like, things like that. And when I've gotten a little bit older and have done a lot more shows here, I don't listen as much as I once did. It's not because I dislike radio. I love radio. I'm a radio nerd. It's because I don't want to have what's being broadcasted and heard maybe affect the way that I approach this job or think about something. I want my genuine opinions and what I'm saying into a microphone be the first time that I'm publicly talking about it. And not that other voices aren't important, but I don't want to hear other people talking about the same things that I'm going to talk about. Now, I'll listen from time to time because I do think it's good. Like, for example, our morning show. We sometimes go back and forth and we have fun with DA and Mraz. I need to be plugged in on the content and plugged in on some of the things that they're talking about. But when it comes to athletes, I think it's impossible when that much is being talked about you that you don't listen from here or there, or you don't read what's being written from time to time. And I say this, when I worked for SiriusXM for like 3 months, and I worked at NFL Radio, when I went to the Super Bowl that year, I can't tell you how many people I got introduced to that go, oh, I listen to you on SiriusXM NFL Radio. I'm talking about like players, coaches. Oh, nice to meet you. It's finally nice to put a face to a voice that I've been hearing all throughout the football season when I did the Monday postgame and the Thursday postgame for them. And there's I've had athletes text me mid-segment. I've had coaches and GMs text me mid-segment when they hear things. Like, either nice to hear you or I disagree with what you said. And there's been times, Zach Streif, by the way, and Roman Harper, 2 former athletes, and now they're involved in the media world, but they would randomly, Zach Streif, I reached out to him. This was like 2-3 years ago. Mikey B said something stupid, my old producer. He said that if Michael Jordan still played today, he still thinks he could score like 50 in a game. I'm like, 50? Come on. Like, you want to say 10? Fine, 50? And the next day, we just so happened to need a Saints guest, so I texted Zach Streif, and he goes, I was listening to you last night. Your producer's a moron. And then Roman Harper, the first time I reached out, he goes, wow, can't wait to come on your show. I listen. We play the rejoin all the time. So I do think athletes listen. They do read. They don't hear everything that's being said about them. And I like when someone of Mahomes' stature is even able to take a little dig. I love that pettiness from someone that's great. And you get inside the mind of what makes him so great. And what gets the reaction from Mahomes when you just won a big emotional AFC West game. You start the year off 2-0. And take a little twist and turn of the knife right into the gut of pro football folks.
And I think it's good sometimes for athletes to hear some of the outside noise. Like Bill Belichick will literally take press clippings and bring it into the locker room and say, hey, everyone thinks you suck. Everyone thinks you're old. Like when they won the Super Bowl in 2018, Brady said, y'all know everyone thinks we suck and everyone thinks we're old. So someone was telling him that that's what the national narrative was about them, and it ends up being motivation most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Fitzpatrick was on Part of My Take, and he says Tua Tagovailoa must have elite accuracy because he has deficiencies in other areas of his game.
If you're a top 10 quarterback, like you have to have at least one trait that is absolutely special, something you can do that really nobody else can do. With Tua, it's not the arm strength. It's not the ability to run. So what is it? You know, people would say, well, he's a winner. Tyreek Hill said he's the most accurate quarterback I've ever seen. Now, those are the things that he has to be elite at. And I think that he is very, very good at, very accurate, and can anticipate. And he has to be the best in the NFL at it because he's limited in some of those other ways.
Maybe I'm just looking too much into this, Connor. The tone from Ryan Fitzpatrick there. I don't think he wants to see Tua. And it's weird because Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of those good guys. I'm not as big of a fan as everyone else is, but people love Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Fitzmagic and all that stuff for a guy that's ever made the postseason as an NFL quarterback. I still think he's annoyed that when he was playing well, he got benched for Tua when Tua wasn't ready. And there's nothing crystal clear that says, yeah, he's rooting against the guy. But when I listen to that clip, I hear like a little disgust in his voice when just mentioning the name Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, and you know that last year he was sitting there and he was saying, like, this guy's not that good. I should be the starter. Yeah. And why is this guy starting over me? And I don't think he's rooting against him, like you said, but I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick thinks Tua is a good quarterback. Because if you're trying to say that the only way he could really have success is if he has incredible accuracy because he's deficient in other areas. If you played with a guy and you thought he was talented, you'd say, well, he's a really, really talented player, just needs to sharpen up here or there. To be really critical and say that he's deficient and he's this and he's that and he has to be, like Tyreek Hill said, one of the most accurate passers in football. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick must have been sitting there last year saying, I'm seeing this guy in practice. I don't think he's very good.
And two things. When it comes to throwing the deep ball and then when it also comes to accuracy, these are two things that just annoy me. When I hear arm strength and accuracy, he's the most accurate quarterback in the world, but if you can't throw the football more than 10 yards, what does it mean? And the same thing for arm strength. You can throw the football 65 yards. If you can't be accurate, doesn't mean anything. Now, I was once a big fan of Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think they won last week because of him. He didn't turn the football over. That's big, but that defense stood out to me more. That's a big game this week. And there's a lot of eyeballs that could change the narrative on Tua if Tua finds a way to go into Baltimore Ravens country and go get a victory. Let's go to Sean Payton. He was on the NFL Roadshow, and he doesn't like Aaron Rodgers calling out his young wide receivers.
Drives me crazy. Here's the thing. I didn't think he played well. I didn't think Aaron played well. And then after the game, we go to the interview in the locker room, and the very first question posed to Aaron was about bouncing back, and he referenced the first play of the game, the drop pass to the rookie. And I thought, come on. And I like Aaron Rodgers, but I didn't like what I saw. Every once in a while, all of us need to be checked, don't we?
There was a lot of passing the blame around after the game from Aaron Rodgers. And from your leader and from the best player on your team, you would have liked to have heard a little bit more accountability. It's not going to happen, though. And Watson has to catch the football. That wasn't on Rodgers. That was on Watson. Your team, though, still only scored 7 points in that game. And a lot of times, the blame doesn't get put on Aaron Rodgers. Last year, they only scored 7 points in that game up against the 49ers. One touchdown drive. And everyone's talking about the special teams. And special teams wasn't good. But he also had Alan Lazard wide open, and he got greedy trying to go to Davante Adams. 2 years ago, I know everyone gives him the excuse, oh, Matt LaFleur, they were down by 8, and he kicked the field goal. Yeah, dumb to give the football back to Tom Brady. You're also down by 5 twice, and went 3 and out, 3 and out, and other drives where you stalled in the red zone. Now, there's been years where you had crappy defenses. You've had years when it's not been on you. But I do feel because we've anointed him as being so great and being all-time great, and we all know how great of a quarterback he is, that sometimes people are afraid to criticize Aaron Rodgers. Steve Young was on KNBR, and he said Kyle Shanahan was too conservative with Trey Lance in week one.
Yeah, they're very careful. Look, Kyle was not expansive with the game plan for Trey. It wasn't like, oh, here's your coming out party. Let's go. No, it was like very, very careful, very reserved. Mm-hmm. Got to the 10-0 lead, did what he probably, at halftime, I'm sure Kyle thought to himself, perfection, right? Yep. Everything's fine. Let's just go close this down. And then they get jammed up. Let's let the horse run a little bit. Let's let the arm, let's let the processing, the things that we have high confidence on, let's get going. And I think it was very kept. You know, there's no question that Kyle wants to be very, very careful here, and he got caught at it. I don't know that he really got a chance to get into a groove, and I got to believe that Kyle, that's how he wanted to roll with it, and unfortunately got jammed up with it.
49ers play the Seahawks this week. To steal a line from an old Seahawks quarterback, it's time to let Trey Lance. Let's ride. Let's ride this week. That's what you got to do. You got to let Trey cook a little bit this week up against the Seahawks. Now, last week was in the rain. I get it. Seahawks had a good performance last week. They're 1-0. But you should not be afraid of the Seattle team. Now they're without Jamal Adams as well for the season. Tom Brady has struggled up against the Saints. And Tom Brady discussed why him and the Bucs have struggled so much against the Saints over the last few years.
Turnovers, you know, they're a very physical team. I think they beat us up physically. Just a tough, hard-nosed team. They're well coached. They got a lot of good players. You know, they've kind of had a winning organization for a long time. They know how to get the job done. They got a lot of great core players on both sides of the ball that have been there a long time. So it's a tough environment to play, but you got to go play. You know, you play good teams on the road. You got to go play well. And last couple times we played them, you know, haven't done a great job of that. I think it's just understanding why we're losing those games, and there's reasons why in each game. You look at, you know, you can look at them and look at why we won and why we lost the one time we beat them. And we just had to, it's got to be good football.
Notice how Brady just speaks for 45 seconds and says, we just got to be better. Rodgers goes, yeah, that receiver's got to catch the football. Brady didn't say, yeah, our offensive line sucked when we went up against them, and I was on my bottom the entire game. That's how you beat Tom Brady. It's no secret. You got to hit him. And even in that playoff game that they won, they didn't do a good job of protecting the football, Tampa Bay. They won that game because of their defense. Let's go to Willie McGinnis, who Tom Brady calls Willie his big brother. He was on the Rich Eisen show, and Willie says, 5-5, that Tom Brady's only going to retire if he wins the Super Bowl this year.
If he wins it, it could be. He will walk off into the sunset complete and feel like he did what he came back to do. He did sign a 2-year deal, correct? So if it doesn't happen, that year is still lingering out there. I think he gave himself a little bit of cushion, but he did look great. You know, outside of, you know, he still, you know, he lost his left tackle and Donovan Smith and the center Jensen is not there. And I think they had Leonard Fournette hobbled off and, you know, he's still going to play. Chris Godwin left with a hamstring and he still was able, you know, to go out and play at a high level. But I think Tom is loyal to the game. He loves the game. He has a lot of football left. He knows that. And it's just hard to walk off when you have so much left.
I think this is his final year. And if Brady's playing football next year, he may be going home to someone else. Let's just say that. Final one, Alabama Crimson Tide's head coach, the legendary Nick Saban. They're 2-0. Didn't have a great game last week against Texas, but they found a way to win. They have a cupcake game this week up against Louisiana Monroe, the Warhawks. But don't call this a cupcake game. Don't talk about the quality opponent or lack of it to one Nick Saban. Listen up as he got a little bit annoyed with the media.
How hard is it to gauge offensive growth when the quality of opponent can vary, you know, with Utah State, Texas, and now ULM this week?
Well, but, you know, that's your opinion on quality of opponent, all right? It's not mine. I respect all the people that we play, and I respect winning and what you have to do to win, all right? So, and every player should not be focused on who they're playing against relative to their motivation, but every player should want to be the best player they can be. So why would it matter whether we're playing Texas or playing somebody else? That's how you get good. That's how you develop the right habits. That's how you're consistent.
You know, I've told you guys more than once, when I was in the NFL, I watched players. I didn't know who they were playing against. I was just evaluating them. So that means when we play a team that's not as good as somebody else, you don't play as good. So you let the opponent determine how you play. You let the score determine how you play. You determine where you're playing. All right, that determines how you play. So when you get evaluated, what's somebody think? Oh, this guy plays pretty good at home. I don't think we'll draft him. Does that make sense? So I respect what it takes to win. All right, didn't I say this on Monday? What does what's your favorite in a game mean when you're favored by 20 points and you lose? Like two teams did this week. What does it mean? It means the people favoring you either don't know what you're talking about or the players playing got affected by that. Neither one of them are good.
Now, Nick, don't get mad at me, Coach. Alabama this week, a 49.5-point favorite. Watch, they'll be up by 50. Yeah, let's give up a safety here. Let's give the other team 2 points so we can screw all the bettors out there that are trying to pump up our football team and try to say good things about our football team. That's a news brief. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
This season, for the first time, you could hear every Westwood One NFL broadcast stream live for free Mondays, Thursdays, Sunday nights, the International Series, holiday triple headers, and every postseason game. Catch all the action on the Odyssey app on westwoodonesports.com via Westwood One Station Streams or by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports, all sponsored by AutoZone. Free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That is what makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone, AutoZone. You want to know how I know there is some frustration with the fans of the drama Dallas choking Cowboys, or there is some concern? That is when Francois in Dallas gives me a phone call at 855-212-4CBS. How you been, my friend?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you taking my call. And if you'd put me on hold so I can hear your response, I'd appreciate it. I just want to make this comment. You know, when the Kansas City Chiefs played Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl and got beat up, they went into that game without their two starting tackles.
Yep.
And I was critical of Andy Reid because he didn't change his approach. He tried to play the same way. They sat back in coverage and almost killed Patrick Mahomes. So I said that to say, going into that first game of the season against Tampa, you know you're unsettled on the entire left side of your offensive line. You have no receivers with any experience, save CeeDee Lamb, who, by the way, is not a number one receiver. And then you come out and you try to throw the football, and I'm sure you saw what Mike Carthy said. He said that Kellen Moore has got to make better decisions and he's got to be more conservative. So I said this to say this, is that when you're paying Zeke Elliott the kind of money you're paying him, you got to lather him up. He's got to get minimum 22 carries a game because you can't play the same way. And even when they had Cooper, Cedric Wilson as your three, and a healthy Michael Gallup, they still didn't commit to the running game. That's why the back end of last season, you saw that their offense tanked, Dak throwing the ball all over the place, not being accurate with his receivers, and then they put 50 up on two teams that were shell of the team that they were. So sometimes you have to look deeper than the numbers. Just because they had the number one offense last year, I would say that was an aberration. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, Francois, I agree with what you're saying, that they have to run the football more, but let's just call it what it is. Ezekiel Elliott, yeah, he should get 20, 25-something carries. But when you're paying him the money that he's worth, he's not worth that money anymore. They paid him for what he did, not what he's going to do in the future. So you have to run the football with Zeke, with Tony Pollard a lot this week. But even then, it's probably not going to be enough to go in, because Joe Burrow could go get points in a snap of a finger. Now, I'll give that Dallas defense credit last week, because not like Tom Brady and the Buccaneers played a great offensive game. They moved the ball at times, and they had to kick a lot of field goals. But they only had one touchdown, and that was the pass from Brady to Mike Evans right at the goal line. That Dallas defense last week kicked ass. That Dallas defense last week was really damn good. But this week, I don't think you have the horses when it comes to the offensive side of the ball, because Cooper Rush is the quarterback. So it's easy to say run, 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 run. And I agree that should be the philosophy, and McCarthy basically even admitted it. But what happens if that defense does not play that great this week, and you have up against a Bengals team who lost last week and they have offensive line concerns, but you get Joe Burrow off to a hot start? If you go up 14 to nothing, which that's going to be a big key for Cincinnati, just get up early. Because if you get up 14 to nothing, you're going to have to, just by the way this works, make Cooper Rush throw the football more than you would like. And that's when the Cowboys get screwed, when they have to play from behind, when they can't go score for score and it be, let's run, let's run, let's run, let's take 7-8 minutes off the clock. In theory, it's the right way to approach it. But also, I don't think your running backs are that great anymore. And that's the biggest problem with the Cowboys. And I know I predicted the Cowboys for the start of the season to make the playoffs, but I never thought they were going to be a great team. Because you look at the Cowboys' entire roster, where are they great at? Dak's not great. Dak's very good. Zeke, no longer great. Offensive line used to be great. Now it stinks. Micah Parsons, a great player. Trayvon Diggs had a great season last year. That defense is good, not great. And that's been the problem with Dallas for pretty much the last 20 years. They haven't been great in 20 years. They haven't been great in 25 years. Now, there's moments where they're good. There's moments where they've had really respectable teams. But you never kind of view at them and look at them and go, wow, that's the best of the best. So that's going to be a big problem this week. And Francois, I appreciate the phone call. I know you're a loyal Dallas Cowboys fan. Maybe I'm wrong on Monday, but I don't think you got a shot. I don't think there's a chance this week that the Cowboys win. You have a Bengals team that lost. You're starting Cooper Rush. I just don't see it. Now, that defense can get after Burrow. That offensive line is problematic. Not as good as we thought they were going to be with the adjustments they made this offseason. But also, it takes time to get an offensive unit, an offensive line unit, to really gel and build that synergy. Because it's all about trust on that offensive line and knowing what the guy next to you is going to do and whatnot. But for this week, this is a layup game for the Bengals. The question just is by how many points the Bengals are going to win. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back. We'll take a look at three games in college football. And also, there's one NFL game with the loser of this team who, it's an ugly, ugly, ugly start to the season. They'll be getting blasted a lot on Monday. Update time first. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackman.
Live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
Another week of football is here. Got kicked off last night. Kansas City Chiefs come back from down 10 twice to take care of Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers. This weekend in college football, it's weird. I feel like whenever you go, oh, it's not a great slate, it ends up turning into being an excellent slate of games. But really, only three games move the needle to elicit a little bit of a response from yours truly on this very fine national radio program. And I'll start off one game. It's the noon game on Fox, the big noon kickoff, Oklahoma and Nebraska. Now, Nebraska stinks. Scott Frost, though, is no longer there. So if there's going to be a close game, you actually have a shot because, man, Scott Frost, it seemed like he lost every single close game at Nebraska. Now, this game to me The only reason I'm talking about it is for two reasons. You wonder if there's a potential Oklahoma letdown. New coach in Brent Venables, Dylan Gabriel now at the quarterback. You can't allow a letdown to happen when this is a 1-2 Nebraska team that just lost to Georgia Southern. They lost that game in Ireland when their coach was a doofus and elected to, I haven't used the word doofus in a while. I feel like now I'm in like sixth grade again. But their coach acted like a doofus when he directed an onside kick to occur. So just don't let the letdown to happen. But Connor, you know why this game is really intriguing to me? It has nothing to do with Oklahoma other than what I just said. But it has everything to do about the future of Nebraska football. Why do you think I find this game intriguing? And this is not going to be necessarily anything that's going to happen in between, from the goal line to the goal line. This is nothing to do with on the field. This is an off the field conversation. Any idea? Any guess here?
Other than Scott Frost?
It's something related to potentially the next head coach.
I'm not sure.
Urban Meyer.
Oh.
Is in town.
The legend.
Big noon kickoff on Fox. He will be at that game broadcasting the pregame show and the halftime show and the postgame show. If you're the AD of Nebraska, don't you have to kind of just chop it up a little bit with Urban Meyer?
I think you do. Because Urban Meyer, you can say what you want about the disaster that was the Jaguars.
Which was a disaster.
A complete unmitigated disaster. He's going to the bar.
It's actually embarrassing to other disasters. How disastrous it was.
Probably the worst head coaching stint in the history of the NFL.
Which is really saying something. That's not hyperbole. But it's up there.
As a college coach, Urban Meyer is one of the greatest college coaches of all time. And if you're in Nebraska, you used to be a preeminent power. It's been a long time since that's been the case. Urban Meyer is a guy now that the weather factored in. Does he want to deal with that? Building up a new program? I don't know. But where's his health at? Where's his head at, after last year? But he's one of the greatest college coaches of all time. And if you want a guy to rebuild your program into being a national contender, there's not many people in the country better than Urban Meyer.
I would hate if he's coaching Nebraska next year. I would. It would just annoy me. Urban Meyer, I'm not taking anything away from his greatness as a college football coach. But off the field, it was a disaster at Florida. Off the field, it was a disaster at Ohio State. On the field, yeah. You won two national championships at Florida, a national title at Ohio State. You only had two losses in your 2 years at Utah. At Bowling Green, you were 17-6. The dude could coach. We all know that. But I would like to see them go somewhere else. I really would. But you would be foolish if you are running Nebraska, if you at least don't have a conversation with Urban Meyer. Not even if it's, hey, we want to hire you to be our next head football coach. Hey, what do you think about your future? Kick the tires around. Make some vague references to coaching and just see how he reacts. And you know Urban Meyer will entertain that conversation. Because I don't buy for a single second that Urban Meyer does not want to coach anymore. I think this dude wants to coach. He knows that he was a disaster in the NFL. Is that really the way that his legendary coaching career is going to end? With the embarrassment, with the sense of chagrin on his face, with what happened in the NFL? He's going to want to go back to a college program. Now, just because you're a college program that's desperate doesn't mean that you're going to go hire Urban Meyer. The president at USC refused to even entertain Urban Meyer. For Nebraska, though, your program is in a rough spot. I don't even know if that's a top 20 job anymore in college football. And we had Randy Cross on yesterday. And Randy Cross does a great job for CBS Sports. He goes, you got to kind of go outside the box. Randy Cross on this show said, and I agree with him, if you're Mark Stoops, you'd be crazy right now to leave Kentucky for Nebraska. Think about that. In the year of 2022, we could say the coach at Kentucky would be taking a step down. And it's not a definitive upgrade to go be the head football coach of Nebraska. It's going to be very compelling who they bring in. And I think they got to go kind of outside the box. Now, Brian Jones has advocated for Deion Sanders. I would not be surprised if eventually Deion Sanders does get a Power 5 job. I've said maybe you go with Rex Ryan. That was the outside the box name that I threw out there. He was really good in the NFL. and he just seems like he'd be an awesome recruiter, I'll throw Bill O'Brien into that conversation. I think Bill O'Brien would be an excellent hire for Nebraska. People forget he was at Penn State for 2 years when everyone was not giving him any support because he had all those disgusting Paterno sycophants that all they would do even after what happened with Sandusky. Oh, it's not a Joe Pa guy. Oh, all hail Joe. All hail Joe. We can't support Bill O'Brien. And Bill O'Brien said, bleep this. I'm going to the NFL. And he was fine in the NFL. He got the Texans to the playoffs 4 times, which is a disastrous ending. And now he went to the school of Saban for the last 2 years. So he's definitely going to get a head coaching job again. But this time it's going to be in college. So those are just a few names that have been thrown out there. Nebraska, though, is desperate. And I think a few things you need if you're going to bring in Urban Meyer is, one, to be a desperate enough program where you're going to ignore all the stuff that did go on off the field. And you need to be a big enough program. Now, you could argue if Nebraska, like I just did, isn't a top 20 job anymore. For Urban Meyer, though, he knows what that brand once was. And when you're trying to convince someone or if someone's interested, when you are desperate to do something, and I think Urban is desperate again to coach, you sometimes talk yourself into a situation being better than what it actually is. They got to have some conversations this week. There's no doubt about it. They will be having conversations. Just naturally. Like, I've been at those game day type of atmospheres. You know, when I was at Temple and they had college game day there, and that's pretty much what Big Noon now is, the Big Noon kickoff on Fox. You have the athletic director there. You have the sports information director there, and they're interacting with those talent, and they're giving them information and stuff before that broadcast. So be very compelled to see what the conversations are like with Nebraska and Urban Meyer this week. So that's why I'm actually interested in that game. Yeah, there is a little intrigue. Do you get the interim coach kind of juice, and now Scott Frost is no longer there, and does it lead to a Nebraska victory or close game or close to what you expect potentially? But I would just think about Urban Meyer and the interactions with Nebraska this weekend. Another game that I really like this weekend, BYU and Oregon. Now, I don't think Oregon is top 25 worthy kind of this year. I know they started the year off in the top 15. Now they've fallen all the way back to 25. They blew out their opponent last weekend, Eastern Washington, Cupcake U. First week of the season, I know they're going up against defending champs in Georgia. They lost 49-3. I don't trust Bo Nix. I do think Jaren Hall is a much better quarterback than Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is, it's time to say it, like a bad quarterback. And Jaren Hall had a really good year last year. We'll see if the two wide receivers, Puka Nacua and Gunnar Romney, are going to play this week. If not, Roberts was excellent a week ago. And for BYU, this could start to become, if they take care of business this week, and they have a very good defense. Remember, Kalani Sitake was rumored that Oregon had interest in Kalani Sitake. Now, he joined us early in the week, and he wouldn't talk about that. But if they find a way to beat Oregon this week, then after that, you have Wyoming, Utah State, Notre Dame, who's now 0-2 and just lost to Marshall. Then Arkansas, who, it's weird to say that Arkansas is like an underrated program because they're 10th in the country, but Sam Pittman's done a wonderful job, and KJ Jefferson's a really good quarterback. Then Liberty, East Carolina, Boise State, Utah Tech, and Stanford. So really, there's three games on the schedule that you look at from here on out: Oregon, Notre Dame, and Arkansas. And if BYU could run the table this year with beating Baylor, who was 9th in the country, Oregon, who's 25th in the country, Notre Dame, even though they're not a great program this year, it's still the name Notre Dame. And you could go beat Arkansas in a few weeks, which it's going to be tough. If you run the table, we saw Cincinnati last year get in. Why not BYU? I'm not sitting here telling you I think they're going to be in the college football playoff, because I do think they will lose one of these games along the way. But I have a lot of respect for that program and what Kalani Sitake has done. And then finally, Miami A&M. We know Jimbo Fisher's not giving up the play calling just yet. He is making a change at the quarterback position. Haynes King out, and insert the former LSU quarterback, Max Johnson. So we'll see what the second chapter for Max Johnson does look like when A&M goes into College Station, their home turf, and they have their matchup this weekend up against Miami, who's going to be without their stud wide receiver, Xavier Restrepo. Big week for Mario Cristobal. Big week for Tyler Van Dyke. I do not like that A&M is a six-point favorite here. A&M last week, who just lost to Appalachian State, is a six-point favorite against Miami, who's ranked better than them. I get it because you're home, usually right, are given three when you're the home team. Laying three, I don't think that spread should be six. But you got to see how Van Dyke's going to respond with the Restrepo injury. 855-212-4CBS. Ryan and Charlotte next up in the Zach Gelb Show. Ryan, what do you got?
Yo, man, what's going on? Heard you talking about Urban Meyer, Nebraska coaching job, like Bill O'Brien, all that, and I just wanted to like give you my input. So I'm a big old Texans fan. So you know, we had a great season last year. But I watched a lot of AFC South games last year, probably all of them, and watching Urban Meyer's coaching decisions and the way that he was running his team, I was like, I wouldn't want that guy. Like,
oh, I'm not a fan of Urban Meyer. I've been critical of Urban Meyer for a long time when everyone was just praising him for how great he was in college football. In the NFL, he was a disaster, but he's been a guy off the field that you question a lot, or a lot of questionable things have happened off the field. But in college, the dude wins a ton of games.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want to bring that like presence and like into my locker room. Just be like, yeah, that's the guy I want running my team.
Oh, and you're not wrong, Ryan. I would not trust Urban Meyer whatsoever. The way that he handled the Smith situation was disgusting. We've seen all the arrests that happened and all the off-the-field problems that happened when he was at Florida. I get that. But, you know, the reality is college football programs push aside off-the-field problems and the conduct of a person if you could win. And Urban Meyer, over and over and over again, has proven in college football that he wins wherever he goes. Small school, big school, he wins. Now, if I'm Nebraska, yeah, if I'm doing the search, I'm not hiring Urban Meyer. I think they'll have conversations this week. But Nebraska right now is desperate. And when you're desperate, you sometimes look the other way and avoid things. And you hire the guy because you know that he's going to go win college football games. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.